Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Off the Shelf for Saturday, September the 19th, 2009. I'm your host, Denise Turney, coming to you live from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Today I'm honored to bring Runette Nia Ebo. She is the author of the books All for You and God Has All You Need. Runette is also the co-producer of the CD Black on Purpose and the author of 9 books of poetry. Welcome to Off the Shelf, Runette.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, I know our paths first crossed on Ola Jackson's. She owns Onyx Woman magazine and Onyx Woman Network over the summer. You invited me to an outdoor bazaar that was being sponsored by the church you attend, Germantown Church of the Brethren, on Germantown Avenue in Philadelphia. And that's when I bought your novel, All for You.
Yeah,
I read like the whole almost time I was there. And,
really?
And that's, yes.
Say again?
And so that's when I brought your novel, All for You, which I read like voraciously while I was there at the bazaar. And that said, I wanted to ask you, how did you come up with the title to your novel, All for You? How did you derive at that title?
Actually, it was just a catchphrase at the time that I had heard somebody say, you know, this gentleman had planned a surprise party for his wife, and every time he presented her with something else, he would say, this is all for you. So it just kind of stuck in my head like that.
Oh, okay. Okay, that's interesting. Can you share with us, and I have other questions I want to ask you about the book as well, but can you share with us briefly, without giving it, you know, totally away, what the novel All for You is about?
Well, it's about a gentleman, and I had to come up with a catchy name or a fancy name, so when I was going through the phone book looking for something sophisticated, I came across the name Ray Anderson, but that wasn't sophisticated enough for me, so I flipped the name around the other way, Anderson Ray.
Mm-hmm.
Anderson Ray is an ex-police officer who went into detective work and made one of his missions when he became, you know, self-employed or an entrepreneur, if you will, to look for the mother who gave him up when he was a baby. And in the process of doing a good deed for a young lady at 30th Street Station, a whole adventure, if you will, begins to form itself or take place over the next couple of months. And in the process, the young lady who is being abused by the boyfriend that she has at the moment begins to wake up and realize that this is not behavior that she deserves. So she makes a few transitions of her own.
I wanted to ask you, and this early in the story, I want to say maybe almost through half of the novel, the writing is very good, and I want to talk about that later, but this is a question that this kind of irritated me as I was reading the book, which is a good thing about a book when you make the writer or the readers feel the emotion. That's a good sign of a good writer. But why did Gabriel, the woman in the story, why did she stay with Jimmy for as long as she did? He was abusive emotionally, psychologically, and physically, and I just, oh, that irritated me. Oh my God.
Right, but yeah,
why did
but one
stay
of the things
him?
That I've discovered, one of the things that I've discovered even personally, because I've been in abusive relationships before, is that we as women have tendency to believe that we can change the man. If I just love him more, treat him better, if I just do certain things for him, he'll change. And it's a way we kind of deceive ourselves, but because we are the nurturers we are, some of us strongly believe that I can fix it, you know, and it at some point becomes a situation where you got to wake up. Some people don't want to be fixed. Some people can't be fixed. And the only person you can really take care of is yourself.
Definitely.
But you have to come to that awareness. And I've talked to women who've been abused, and many of them in those type of situations said, well, I thought that if I just cared for him more, he would have changed.
Wow.
And this is what a lot of them unfortunately believe, and sometimes it's to their detriment.
Yeah, do you think, I know you also as a a Christian and myself being one as well, do you think sometimes the religious or belief makes people think, you know what, I've been placed here to help this person change and become better, and that's why, have you ever had people tell you that's why they don't leave?
I've had ministers that I've gone to for counseling say, well, if you just pray for him more,
yeah,
you know, it'll be okay. And one even said to me, well, you have to forgive. The emphasis was on forgiveness. The emphasis was not on get yourself to a place of safety.
Right.
And that's where I had to write something one time that addressed that issue. And the poem is called Self-Defense, because the reality is that at some point you have to come to the awareness that you can't change the person, you can't fix the person. However, you can get yourself away from them. So my awareness was, I can love this individual from a distance, because you know, loving them from where I am is making matters worse, and it's not going to help the situation at all.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to ask you, and you've answered that question. Gabriel, for our listeners here at Off the Shelf, she is very intelligent. She's a sharp woman, and I just couldn't get, like, what is, she got a big brick in her brain. Why can she not see that she's helping these children? She's a loving woman. Why was she so loyal to this guy? Why could she not see what is, I don't know, it was like she was blinded or something. She couldn't.
Well, I think what part of it is that abusers start off with deceit, because they start off being everything you want. They convince you that they are a certain way, and it's not until they have you that you begin to see the other side. There are certain ones who are crafty like that, and there's others who you can pick up certain signs right at the very beginning. But it kind of depends on the individual whether or not you begin to see how they are, you know, immediately. In some instances, you can't pick it up until later on, and that's the bad part about it, because when you don't pick it up right away, that's when you run into trouble, and that's when different things and different situations begin to overwhelm you, because you don't feel as though you have any control over what's going on. And I think what she did basically was lie to herself and tell herself that, you know, I just need to love him more, I just need to care about him more, I just need to do certain things, and he'll be a better person. And, you know, she believed that. And I think part of that is because, if you remember, in there, it never talks about her dad. So obviously her dad is not in the picture.
Yeah.
So she has it in her mind that her mother's situation or relationship with her father was broken. She felt like if she could hang in there just a little longer, her situation might turn out a little different.
Okay.
And I'm just saying that because of, you know, some of the women that I run into, this is what they tell me.
Yeah,
you know.
You kind of segue into my next question, but you made a comment not to go over this on and on, because there are a couple of other things you've done that I want to discuss. But you said there are some signs to look for. I'm thinking, just as a helpful thing for our listeners here at Off the Shelf, we don't know who all the people around the globe who tune in, but what are some of the signs that, briefly, that women can look for, or men even, because some women are abusers?
I know, because I know a battered husband. And I think their situation is even more significant, because they're in a situation where, you know, the attitude is, that little teeny woman beat you up, look at you, you a big strapping guy, there's no way that could happen. So as a result, you know, we tend not to believe him.
Right.
You know,
right.
But I think the biggest thing that has to be realized in that instance is that the woman's strongest weapon is her tongue. And she has no idea. She can literally bring a man to his knees based on what she psychologically tells him on a consistent basis, especially if he believes her.
So what are some of the signs? Is that one of them, verbal abuse, somebody putting you down?
Verbal abuse, you know, saying things like, you need me, you can't survive without me, being extra possessive. I mean, how many times does he ask, you know, when you're away, where were you? How come it took you so long? Why didn't you call? You know, if it's one of those type situations where he's constantly needing to know where you are,
okay,
then you should ask yourself, what is the big trust issue here?
Okay.
You know, because it may be bigger than a trust issue.
Okay. Okay, those are good tips, and I thank you for sharing those with our listeners. I was going to ask you next about do daughters, do you think they tell themselves that they'll never be like their mother to endure the hardships and heartbreaks that she did? And when they find themselves coming like down a similar path their mother did, that they can't, it's almost as though they feel like, you know, if it wasn't for you, if you had picked a better man, I wouldn't be living through this. I wouldn't have had that example. And that can cause some animosity between a mother and a daughter. Have you found that as well? Because Gabriel and her mother, there was some strain there in their relationship.
Yeah, because Brandice had very little respect for Jimmy. Very little. If you listen to how she talked to him, most of the time, she didn't refer to him by name. Often she usually referred to him by fool. What did that fool do now? And part of the reason for that was because she didn't see him as a man because of his behavior, his possessiveness, his abusiveness, the way he kind of controlled situations or needed to control them. Even from the very beginning, when you remember back at 30th Street Station, when he found another guy talking to Gabrielle, he immediately went into hostile mode.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
And I think there's a saying that's been out for years that said children learn what they live.
Yeah.
And I think that is true, especially in a house where the father abuses the mother on a consistent basis. If you have a daughter in that house, she begins to feel as though, you know, whatever her mother is doing, that's the way she needs to behave toward men.
Right.
And the other thing is, I heard a minister preach one time, and he was telling the truth when he said, mothers teach their daughters how to be women. But fathers teach their daughters how to be wives. And that's not an incestuous statement. It's simply that the interaction between a father and a daughter has a lot to do with how she's going to behave with a man once she's a grown woman. And unfortunately, in situations where she sees a lot of verbal abuse going on, sometimes she does tell herself, this is how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Now, that's not true, but she has to come to an awareness at a later time that the situation in her house is not a positive one, and it has to change.
Yeah, and that it's not widespread. So you can live in some areas where everybody's kind of living the same lifestyle, and you can think, well, it's just the way it is. So
yeah.
You know, if I want a man, or if you're a man and you say I want a woman, this is just what I got to find a way to deal with this, because this is just the way all people are. And that is not.
And then some women, if you remember Cassandra, her justification for what was going on was, well, look what I got.
Yeah.
I got a condo, I got nice clothes, I got this, I got that. So as long as I don't make him mad, I can keep all of this. And she deceived herself into believing that was what made her happy.
Yeah. I highly recommend All for You to our listeners and any book readers. I wanted to ask you last question about the book. Have mothers come up to you and thanked you for writing All for You because they thought, you know, the book could either help their grown daughter or another woman to avoid what Gabriel actually had to live through?
What mothers have done in certain instances, and I deliberately wrote a book that was curse-free, was tell me that they were able to hand that book off to their daughter and say, if you have any questions about what you've read, you know, come back and let's talk about it. So it has opened doors of communication for some mothers and daughters. And I visit women in rehab anyway, but in certain instances, we've taken books with us. Some of them have even, you know, like their directors or whoever's in charge of the facility has purchased a bunch of them. That has become part of their sessions, where they read different chapters in the book and then sat down and discussed some of the characters in there. Because if you remember, there are four women in there in different stages of domestic abuse. So their counselors have even told me, I've asked the women to tell me, which character do you identify strongly with, you know, and would you do the same things that she did, or how would you have handled that situation differently? And it has helped them. So, it's an added plus or an added blessing that I wasn't expecting, but once I realized that that was the direction was going in, I realized that that was a stronger reason why God kind of pushed me mm-hmm. to write the book.
Wow, that it really all for you is a the writing is clear, it's effective. You're gonna feel emotions, and there's some of the characters you probably will say, "Oh my gosh, if she was my friend, I'd be sitting there down at the real." If you don't open your eyes, see the
right.
light.
I have one son who is incarcerated,
mm-hmm.
and you know that was hard for me to deal with. But mm-hmm. I sent him a copy of the book once it was done,
mm-hmm.
and he's actually loaned it out to other inmates, and they've come back and sat down with him and said, you know, I used to be a Jimmy, or I'm still a Jimmy, or whatever.
Yeah.
And he said, okay, so how's that working for you? You know, and they've yeah. had conversations. So he said, Mom, you always say when you're in a situation, you know, ask God why you're really here, because sometimes you may be in a situation and the evident reason why you're there is not the key reason why you're there. So he has had inmates come and talk to him who are actually older than he is, but they relate to some of the characters in the
right.
book, and they've sat down and they've talked to him about it. So
wow,
I see where it's therapeutic in so many different ways.
And that is a blessing. You took on a very heady topic in all for you that impacts, I mean, thousands and thousands and thousands of people. But I also read some of your online poetry. And it's obvious that you also tackle tough real-life issues in your poetry. For instance, your poem, Dear Mr. Crack, begins.
And if
you don't mind, I just wanted to read a few lines from it.
Sure.
It begins, Dear Mr. Crack, please give my mommy and daddy back. I'm not supposed to talk to strangers, but when they're with you, I know they're in danger. Since you've come around, they're never home. And I really don't like when I'm home alone. And I read that, and I'm like, wow. And just, I could tell like a little kid asking this question, trying to figure out what's going on in the
yeah.
home. It's a very a compelling and effective opening. I wanted to ask, do you write based on what you see happening around you, where you work, or the different organizations you work with, or in your local neighborhoods? Is that what you write, get your material to write about from those areas?
Well, I write about people most of all because people are the most fascinating thing to write about. I don't write about nature so much unless I give nature some sort of personalization.
Mm-hmm.
But I had the blessing, the pleasure of meeting Gwendolyn Brooks
wow.
about 2 years before she died.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and it was the most phenomenal experience for me. I was just spellbound because I was assigned her poetry in high school, and it just went over my head. I'm sorry to say I didn't get it, you know, but I think there's times when certain things should be introduced into your life, and then there's other things that you're just not ready for, but thank
right.
God I went back to it later.
Mm-hmm.
And she came to Philadelphia, and
oh.
I watched this woman stand and read her poetry and explain some of her poetry, and it was just such a phenomenal experience
mm.
that I was on a high, and I was walking home, and clearly, and some people understand this and some people don't, but I'm blessed to have that kind of a relationship with God. He said, pick up the mantle because I'm taking my angel home. And I had no idea what that meant at the time. All I knew was I met Gwendolyn Brooks, and wow, you
yeah.
know. But as soon as I got home, I wrote this poem called Are You My Daddy? And it's a young boy who, well, not that young, actually, it's a boy in school. And it's like every time he's standing in a room where there's a bunch of men, he's looking around and he's going,
mm.
Are you my daddy? Are you my daddy?
Mm-hmm.
Are you my daddy? You look like me, you know. And even though single mothers tell themselves, because I raised my children as a single mother when I was divorced, you know, and they tell themselves that it doesn't matter, it's not that important to them, you know, because
no,
I'm
it
all,
is. It is.
All of that. But it is, and
yeah.
they don't talk about it much, but it's there.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I read that poem in a classroom, it evoked such discussion from
mm.
the students till I realized, okay, this is what I'm supposed to be doing now. I'm supposed to be doing poetry that addresses issues. And when I did Dear Mr. Crack, I'll never forget it because I was I had to speak for an NAACP banquet in Reading. and this young man, and I say this not because I'm color conscious, but there's a significance behind it. It's a young white fella who insisted on doing the interview with me that was going to go in the paper because he said he used that poem for his thesis in college because he wanted to address certain critical issues that go on with people, but we don't talk about the impact that drug use has on the children of the person who's doing the using.
Yeah.
And wow. That particular poem, he said, pulled so much at him that he felt like that was what he needed to address in his paper, and that was the reason why he had to meet me.
Oh, my goodness.
You know? So that's part of the reason why I write those kinds of poems more so now than I used to. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is because when I go into classrooms, it's kind of my introduction.
Okay.
I read a poem like that, and then I say to the young people, what's going on?
Okay.
And you'd be surprised, the room just erupts into discussion.
Yeah.
You know, so it helps to get something going, you know, that the teacher can even use later on.
And I think that's fabulous, Runette. I wanted to ask you, you also wrote a book called God Has All You Need. Can you tell our listeners briefly what God Has All You Need is about?
God Has All You Need is inspirational poetry, spiritual-based poetry, and I even got the assistance of my godmother to give me the scripture references that would go with each one of the poems because I didn't want just a plain old book of inspirational poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted there to be a tie between the poems themselves and God's word, partly because of what accepting the Lord did for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was Catholic for the first, or they say, primary years of my life,
mm-hmm.
and had a few negative experiences as a Catholic. First time I ever heard the word nigger, I was Catholic, you know, and a nun used it.
Mm.
I didn't know what it meant. I was 8 years old, but I knew it had to be a nasty word because of the way she scrunched her face up when she said it.
Yeah.
You know, and that experience did a lot to make me realize that, no, wait a minute, this is a place that claims to know a lot about God, you know, and we study religion every day. Mm-hmm. But it also woke me up as I gradually began to learn about God myself that there's a big difference between religion and spirituality.
Yeah.
You know, and once I came to have a more spiritual relationship with God, I realized certain things are just not right no matter whose mouth they come out of.
Oh, yes. You're so true. You put that so well.
Yeah, so what happened, I'm a firm believer in signs, you know, and somebody's going to take that and go another way with it. But what I mean is three different people who don't know each other said to me, well, why don't you take all your poetry from your previous books that is inspirational, talks about God and the spiritual walk, and put them all in one book.
Mm-hmm.
So when two people said it to me, I took it under consideration. When the third person took it and said it to me, and I knew these three people didn't talk to each other,
okay,
that was confirmation for me that I needed to do it.
Okay.
So I put the book together, and you know, at that time, everybody was saying God is good all the time, and all the time mm-hmm. God is good. And I said, but God, I need, you know me, I got to be different. I need something else. I need something that's me.
Right.
You know, and somebody said something to me one day, and they said, well, you know, in this particular situation, God has all you need.
Mm.
And I said, because all you need is God. And I said, wow.
That's
and it. That was what, yes.
Wow.
And that was how that came to be.
Oh, my goodness. Can somebody, Runette, who is not religious or doesn't go to church, can they understand and benefit from reading the book God Has All You Need?
I tell you, it's funny you asked that question because another story immediately came to mind. I have a mentor, Thelma Sheldon Robinson. I love that lady dearly, and I think she's about at least 10 years older than me. But she tells me things all the time, and I pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
And she visits retirement homes from time to time. She even visits individuals who are, you know, mentally ill.
Mm-hmm.
And we have done programs where we shared our poetry with them. And we were doing a program one day, And the Lord just spoke to me and said, give that gentleman a book, because he was sitting on the front row. And the whole time we were doing our poetry, whether it was me or Thelma, it didn't matter who, his head was down.
Okay.
I said, well, he hasn't looked up one time since we've been here. I guess we haven't said anything that has touched him at all.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the Lord urged me to give him a book. So I autographed it, and I said, may you be comforted through whatever it is that is vexing you now.
Right.
And I handed it to him, you know, and I don't even know why I wrote that other than that was God, too. So I handed him the book. He didn't say anything. He just kind of looked up at me with these really, really sad eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was time for, you know, all the patients to leave, he left. But I got a call later on in the week from his counselor, and she said, oh, I want to thank you. I want to thank you so much. So I thought she was saying, thank you for coming.
Right.
You know, and she said, no, she said, you handed Johnny, and I'm using a fictitious name because I don't want to do it, you know. But she said, you handed Johnny a book before you left. She said, and you had no idea what was going on. She said, they had just called him that morning to tell him they were taking his mother off life support. And he couldn't be there because he's, you know, when
right.
you're going into rehab programs of certain kinds, you're in
right.
a certain amount of confinement, and he hadn't reached his 90 days yet.
Okay.
So they couldn't let him go to be by her side. So it was really, really tough on him, you know,
mm-hmm.
to get word that that was going to happen and he couldn't go to the hospital. So she said, but he read that book like he was eating a meal.
Wow.
You know, and I was glad to do it. I mean, I didn't know what it was going to do for him. I just tried to be obedient.
Yes, and you know, it works out when we are, because we don't need to know everything, and it
mm-hmm.
works out when
no,
we are.
No, we don't.
I wanted to ask you next, Runette. You write your scenes and the things you share with your poetry and also your novel All For You, so that your readers can feel and see what the book's characters are experiencing. I wanted to ask, where did you learn to write? Did you receive formal training at a college, university, or some other type of school?
I started writing poetry at 10 years old.
Okay.
And it wasn't formal training. It was just something. I loved poetry as a child. You know, the library was like my favorite place to go. You
okay.
could, you know, for anybody take my library card, you didn't have to put me on punishment. Just take my library card away from me for about a week, and I was devastated. You know, but, and whenever I went, I always read at least one poetry book, no matter what else I was reading. And so I also realized that, I came to realize that poetry could be therapeutic, because when my great-grandfather passed,
mm-hmm.
you know, I was upset. I mean, that was my best buddy. I was
yeah.
blessed to know my great-grandfather
wow.
for several years of my young life, around the ages 3, 4, 5, you know.
Uh-huh.
And he and I spent so much time together that when he passed, and I was at the funeral home, you know, where they had the service and all.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking around, and everybody was crying but me, and I definitely didn't understand that, because nobody loved Pop-Pop more than me as far as I was concerned.
Uh-huh.
But I couldn't understand why I wasn't shedding any tears.
Right.
And my mother, in her wisdom, when we went back to the house for the repast, and I decided to go up to the room where he and I had spent most of our time, because he had this room on the second floor that was like an office, a little mini office for him, and he had this roll top desk, and he and I used to sit there all the time and talk, or, you know, he'd play games with me, because the desk had so many little drawers and compartments and stuff. He'd hide things in there. He'd hide change, he'd hide candy, and I had to go exploring if I wanted my treat. And so my mother gave me a pencil and a piece of paper, and I wrote a poem called What Is a Tear and Why Do You Cry? Don't ask me where it is now, because I have no idea.
Wow.
But I know after I wrote it, I felt better.
Wow.
And that was my, I guess, the key that unlocked the door, because once I realized that writing poetry was a release for me,
yes.
I did it often.
Oh, my goodness.
Know, when I was upset, when I was angry, when I was happy, when
yes.
something just, you know, I just felt like I couldn't put it into words verbally.
Right.
I would write it down, and that just turned into other things.
Wow.
Later on, it was my escape because I was one of those weird kids that liked school.
Okay.
You don't have many friends when you like school.
Oh.
People think you're weird. So
yeah.
to get around that, because I watched soap operas when I went home,
uh-huh.
I would write stories, and my stories would include my classmates, even though their names were disguised. So after a while, the joke in school became, don't mess with Ebo. She might put you in one of her stories. And if you don't like how the character turns out, then, you know, you don't want to be there.
I wanted to say, readers certainly learn from what you write. And going back to how you started writing, you know, with poetry, when I interview other writers, either in the newsletter, the Book Lovers Tavern, or here on Off the Shelf, it's always interesting. Most writers I find start young. Most of them do. But I wanted to ask you, I know readers learn from what you write.
Mm-hmm.
And this is coming from a question from myself as a writer as well. But what have you learned from your own work? Because things surface as you continue, particularly in a long piece like a novel. Have you ever finished writing a poem or a book, and then you step back and see how enlightened by what you wrote, that something, you know, it's coming through you from the source. Have you stepped back and said, wow, at the end of it, you learned something as you finished?
Well, that would take me back to your previous question, because my mother paid for me to go to Church of the Advocate. Now, at that time, they didn't have an art sanctuary, which
mm-hmm.
is what they have now for the young people to go and learn all kinds of art, singing, dancing, writing, all of that. They didn't have that back then, but they did have volunteer teachers who came and did different classes, and she paid for me to take creative writing. And to be honest with you, I got a little bit of an attitude because here I was grown and married, you know.
Oh, okay.
And she's telling me, you're going to take this class because I paid my $10 for you to do that. You know, I'm looking at my husband like, tell her something because I ain't got to, you know. And she says, no, you're going to go take the class. You know, I'm your mother and I said so. So I go, and the gentleman there, I love him dearly. He became my mentor, you know, but at first I didn't like him because his first question was, who in here thinks they're a writer? So, of course, all of us raised our hands.
Mm-hmm.
We're in here taking creative writing just because we want to enhance.
Right.
And he said, and how many of you have shared your work with somebody? So most of us raised our hands again.
Mm-hmm.
And then he said, and how many of you have shared your work with complete strangers? Well,
yeah.
Didn't so many hands go up this time, and he said, you are not a real writer until
wow.
you open yourself up to people who don't know you, and they learn who you are from what you write.
Wow.
Yeah, and I would say that if I was going to describe what he did for me, he took this sponge that was full of herself, wrung her out, and made her fuller of what I needed to become a better writer.
Wow. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, that's I've never heard
it really did.
That is an interesting question. How important, Runette, is it to you that you write something every day? I hear a lot of people who want to, you know, really pursue writing, and particularly novel writing or poetry, but they struggle. They wait to write until, you know, they're inspired or the muse hits. Do you sit down and write something every day, or do you let weeks and months go by before you sit down and write something new?
I guess I do that in phases, because that was one of the things the teacher emphasized. He said we should do something for 1 hour every day.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have to confess that I don't necessarily stick to that on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
But in spurts, I will go back to it, because I do get my best stuff when it wakes me up at 3 a.m. in the morning.
Okay.
I came to write my signature poem, Lord, Why'd You Make Me Black, at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Okay.
But what I have done, and I kind of make myself do, is I will take writing that I've done in the earlier stages of my life,
mm-hmm.
pull it back out and say, okay, can you spruce this up or change it or make it better? Or can what's written here inspire you to write something else? And sometimes I'll get a complete another poem out of it. And other times all I'll do is, as they say, upgrade it a little bit so that it doesn't sound quite so sing-songy, because I love rhyme.
Okay.
You know, but I've begun to venture into areas where I don't rhyme as much because it doesn't have as much punch
okay.
as, you know, certain poems do when you don't rhyme them.
Okay, okay. I want to talk next about, because you are doing several things, different things, and I find that the last few guests I've interviewed, they have just either writing across several genres or they're doing a lot of different things as artists. Black on Purpose, I know, is a CD that you co-produced. What was just co-producing it? Because as a writer, I don't know anything about producing a CD, and many of our listeners might not. What was the experience like to co-produce a CD?
I was blessed to have a friend who does less procrastinating than I do. See, writing All For You was my proof that I could finish something I started.
Okay.
And that was really all I wanted to do with it. I wanted to prove to myself I could write a fiction story from beginning to end, and I'm done. The only problem was when I finished it, God said, I didn't give you this to write and then sit on it. You have to put it out there. So
right.
that was another challenging part. But mm-hmm. when it came to the CD, I have a good friend named Donna Johnson. And what Donna did was tell me, I have a CD on which I have some music. And I want you to listen to the music and see if there's anything you feel you can use with any of the poetry that you have.
Mm-hmm.
She said, and then we'll go from there. And so I listened to the CD, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, that'd be nice background music for this. And, you know, then I started making a list. And the next thing I know, she's calling me on the phone, said, we're going in the studio. I'm like, what? I thought you was playing. You know, she's like, no, this is serious business. We're going to do this, you know. And the blessing for me has been men. Men have responded to the CD.
Wow.
You know, and for me, the reason why that's a blessing, first of all, even going back to the fiction book there, I wanted to write believable characters.
Because uh-huh.
too many times when you read a fiction love story,
right.
the men in the story don't sound like real people.
Right.
I've had guys who've read my fiction book and go, so where are these brothers at, you know, because they really sound like folks
yeah.
you want to sit down and talk to. And with the CD, I have had deacons in church. I have had pastors come to me and say, you know, this really speaks to the heart of the matter when it comes to certain things. And the other guy who put the CD together for us, Samori Coles, Little Drummer Boy Productions, he told me, he said, when you put the CD out there, make sure that you write a book that has the same poems. And I'm like, well, put the CD together. What I need a book for, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, because this way people have an option. They can either buy the book
okay.
or they can get the CD, because
right.
some people still like to read. And I never pass myself off as a spoken word artist, because to me, there is a difference.
Okay.
Spoken word artists want to be heard, and
okay.
their focus is more on a CD and presentation in front of you.
Right.
And poets, for the most part, want you to buy their book.
Okay,
because
right.
even if I walk away from you, you still have my poetry.
Correct, right.
Yeah. So when I put the CD together, I did do the book, because I believe sometimes that it's best to just take people's suggestions without a whole lot of debate.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, questions, just do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about that was a young man came to me. He had been to something else where I was. He had bought the CD and he had bought the book and somehow went to my website, found out another place I was going to be and came. And he came up to me specifically when I was, you know, finished. And he said, thank you. So, I'm looking at him a little puzzled, and he said, I bought your book and CD the last place you were.
Okay.
Said, and I'm only 23 years old, and I don't or didn't know how to read.
Wow.
He said, but playing your CD and following the words in the book to the poems,
okay.
I'm able to pick out more stuff now.
Oh, my goodness.
So he said, because I didn't want to start with a baby book.
Right.
And I didn't, he said, and I was too ashamed to go to one of these programs
right.
and say to people, you know, I don't know how to read past the third grade or whatever.
Right.
He said, but I listened to your CD and I'm able to follow, you know, the words in the book.
The book. Oh, that is fantastic.
You know, you never know why you're doing certain things. You just kind of sometimes take people's advice.
Yeah, yeah. do you plan, Runette, to co-produce or produce other musical pieces?
Well, I wrote a children's play,
mm-hmm.
and it's called The Weatherman Goes on Trial. And my dream is to one day be able to put that production on. What I want to do is go to somebody's summer camp and say, here is something that you can use for the whole 8 weeks as not just a summer camp program type thing or theme,
mm-hmm.
but you can also use it at the end of summer camp to present a play that you can use as a fundraiser to raise money either for the next summer or for your closing events, you know. And I would love to do that sometime soon, you know. And I've talked to different people, but there's not been any follow-through so far.
Okay. I didn't know, as checking out your website, I didn't know that Philadelphia churches had, like, spoken word events until I went to your website, and I want to give our listeners your website URL. You can find Runette, the author of All For You, and the author of God Has Everything You Need. She's also a poet. She's at www.poetebo.com. So that's www.poetebo.com. And I encourage you to go over there and check her works out. But I didn't know Philadelphia churches had spoken words events until I went to your website. How did you find churches who host such events? I've never heard of churches that have spoken words.
Well, I think there's more churches getting into it now because people need alternatives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like if you come to mine, mine is Poetify, Poetry to Edify. And the main reason why it says what it says is I say, keep it real, make it plain, but don't bring it here if it's profane.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that many churches have gotten into it because they know that their young people and even other folks in the church want an alternative to walking in a place, and they say, I love poetry, but I got to hear all this other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want all that cussing, and I don't want all that put down, and I don't want all that abusive language.
Right.
You know, and so the church is presenting an alternative. And I think one of the good things about the alternative is it gives opportunities to different people in church to share their talent. They can come and I even get praise dancers, liturgical dancers. I get
right.
mime. I get gospel singers. You know, anybody who wants to share, as I put, their God-gifted spirit can come to Poetify.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I guess, too, in the process, when people sign in, I ask them, you know, do you go to any other venues? And when they tell me where some of them are, you know, once I've gone, I do kind of give it a rating, not because I think I'm big and bad, but I think that people need to know what they're walking into when they go somewhere, because
right.
I've been to some venues, and I promised myself I'm not going back because the language was just so offensive, you know, and you say to yourself, well, what are people thinking?
Right.
You know, and unfortunately, young people have convinced themselves that poetry and spoken word doesn't sell unless you're cussing all over the place.
Right. Mm.
You know, but I'm still one of those who believes that scripture that says it's not what goes into man that defileth him, it's what comes out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, what is the MTM band, and are you a member of this band? You just got so many things going on. What is this band? The
MTM
band?
Stands for Many Thoughts of Music.
Okay.
And I'm not a quote unquote member. They made me their manager.
Oh.
They called me Mama Ebo, but a while back I decided that I needed to finish something I started because I went to college back in, you know, 68, 69, 70, but I didn't complete.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point I said to myself, well, you need to at least get some kind of degree. So I decided to go back to school at this late date and get at least my associate's.
Okay.
So I did that.
Congratulations.
And funny thing was, I already had my venue, you know, with the poetry going on, and the band had already been there with me for a year.
Okay.
You know, because they came for the anniversary when I was celebrating my first anniversary being where I was. Thought it was such a wonderful thing, they decided to stick and stay. And then when I got my degree, the next time I was at the venue, you know, and somebody said to them, well, do you do weddings and birthday parties and all that stuff? And the bass player, Alfred Mojo Moore, said, yeah, see that lady over there? That's our manager. Go talk to her. No, so she came over and talked to me and asked me all these questions, and I'm looking at them like, what? She said, well, they said you're their manager.
Oh, okay.
So he's looking at me like, you are? What do you think? We're waiting for you to finish school.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, so I've been managing them for about a year and a half.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, gosh. Like, what is this lady asking me all these questions about? What type of music does the band play, and do they only perform in churches? Or I know you said, at weddings, they perform at other
churches. They play different places. There are places they won't go because they're Christian men.
Mm-hmm.
But they do weddings. They do birthday parties. They do, you know, they've even played at some of the political affairs that have come up, whether they like the candidate or not. They said, it's a paycheck. We don't care, you know. But they play jazz. They play gospel. They play R&B.
Okay.
And as they say, they even get a little funky from time to time.
All
right,
But
they try to keep it all tasteful no matter what.
Okay. How can people schedule you yourself to speak poetry, or the MTM band to appear in an event? How can they reach you to schedule yourself or the band?
Well, if they go to the website, it has my email address and it also has my phone number. But if you want, I can give either one of those over the air also, you know, because they can reach me through Lady Runette, that's LadyRunett at netzero.net. Or, if it's easier, they can do poetebo, which is poetebo, at yahoo.com.
Okay, and then, again, Runette's website is www.poetebo.com, poetebo.com. And you can check out the band. And I noticed there were people playing music at the bazaar that went to this summer, and I don't know if they were. It sounded like it was just.
It was a mixture, because we do have a couple of people from the band who play on Sundays now.
Okay.
But actually,
that music
the band
sounded very good. That music was very good. I was just telling our listeners, if it was the band, the music was very good at the bazaar.
Uh huh. Yeah. Well, it was a few members of MTM, along with our church musicians.
Okay. Many thoughts and music, the MTM band. Did you go to the 31st Annual People's Festival in Germantown? I've never been there, and I wanted to ask for our listeners who might be in the Philadelphia area or either visiting, if you could just share with us a little bit about what that event was like, if somebody wanted to go in the future.
I went previous years. I didn't go this time because I actually had a conflict. I promised a friend I would do something for them, and unfortunately it was at the same time as the People's Festival. But the interesting thing about the People's Festival was that the individual who put it together, Frank James, he had a dream many, 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 many years ago that people ought to come together at Vernon Park and share. You know, vendors come, and, I mean, you get to eat good food, you get to listen to good music, you hear poetry. They have had dancers, but it's a little difficult based on the structure of the place.
Okay.
They've had marching bands, but it's an interesting day out that's not as expensive as going to some of the other places in the city where everything just costs such astronomical fees.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of the best things, as they say, we put in Northwest Philly. But from what I understand, the people who coordinated it this year were somewhat disappointed because they didn't feel as though they got the support they have had in previous years.
Okay.
And I said the gentleman's name wrong. I said Frank James, and his name is Frank Jones.
Okay.
And I think part of the reason why some of the support and all has fallen off is because he passed away.
Uh-oh.
It's just not quite the same with him missing, although they have tried to keep it going, and I think the effort to do so is commendable, whenever I'm available to do it. You know, I have done the festival. I have usually shared my poetry on the Sunday half because they do it on Saturday and Sunday.
Okay.
And Saturday, the focus of the music is usually hip-hop, R&B and jazz. And on Sunday, it's usually jazz and gospel.
Okay, okay. Are you a Philadelphia native, Runette? I can hear your passion even when I met you for the city.
Born and raised.
Yeah, you can tell. You can tell. You I said I had to
Well, that was part of the reason that I focused the book in Philly. That was funny because I said, you know, you read so many books, fiction books. It's in New York. It's in Chicago. It's in San Francisco is this place. I said, well, Philadelphia is good too, you know, so I wanted to bring that out. And that's why the opening scene is at 30th Street Station.
Right.
And it was so funny because when I did the part about 22nd and Westmoreland, my husband took me down there and I'm standing there and I got this little clipboard and I'm drawing, I'm sketching so I could, you know, when I verbally laid it out, I wanted to make sure I did it accurately. And the people are coming out of their houses going, what's she doing? Why is she standing there drawing our street and stuff? You know, what's going on? Getting ready to put stuff down here that we don't want.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah,
but it was an experience. I had fun.
Yeah, you can tell you Philadelphia born and raised.
Yes, yes.
You have a strong, you're an artist. You have a strong business acumen. You're a marketer. How do you manage, Runette, to wear these multiple hats and keep it all balanced?
That's my mama. I have to give all credit to my mother, Evangelist Elaine Ebo, knits, crochets, sews. She's a musician. She composes music. She has directed choirs. She's a minister. Mm-hmm. You know, she does teaches Bible study.
Okay.
She's a mama and a grandmama and a great-grandma. See, you get it now? That's where that comes from. Yeah,
you're your mother who did so many different things.
Right. Runette,
if you weren't a writer, what do you think you'd be doing right now?
Well, probably running off at the mouth and getting paid for it.
Oh,
because that's another thing that I tell the students when I go into school. I say, everybody gets a job because you need to work. You need to get paid because you need to pay bills. You need to be, you know, self-sustaining.
Mm-hmm.
But when you can do something you love and get paid for it, that, as I put it, is the gravy, you know. And right now, that's what I'm living. I'm living the gravy because I get to go into schools. I get to talk to students. I don't just talk to them. I interact with them. And somebody hands me a check.
Wow, yeah.
You know, and that to me is wonderful.
Right. As we come down to, we got about 6-7 minutes left to the end of our interview. I just had a few other questions that I wanted to ask you. First, who are some of your favorite writers, Runette, and what is it about their work that you appreciate most? We already know you like Gwendolyn Brooks, but who are some of your other favorite writers?
Well, my inspiration is Nikki Giovanni.
Okay.
She is the reason I finally decided to step out there and make my work public. Because I listened to her when she did an interview when her album of poetry first came out, and she said her dad said something to her that was inspirational and encouraging. He said, sometimes you just got to close your eyes and step in it, whatever it is, you know. And I felt that. I don't know why, but that was it for me. So I closed my eyes and I just went for it. And that, you know, was the thing that opened the door and said, okay, you can do this.
Wow.
And her poetry pulls at me, Nikki Giovanni's. And I like poetry that's real. I don't like poetry that talks over my head. And I don't like poetry that once I put it down, I got to sit there and go, when I'm finished reading. And unfortunately, some of the young people who hand me their books, I read their poetry and I want to cry because I'm like, who are you writing this for? Nobody understands you, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, you know, keep it real. And real means don't use a whole bunch of big words you found in
Not
the dictionary impressed. Just because they sound eloquent.
Write
something that somebody can grab a hold of.
Right,
because that's where people are. When they're in pain, They don't want to hear how well you enunciate. They want to hear how well you relate.
Right.
So,
I agree. And I also wanted to ask you next, are you working on anything new? You seem to you have a lot going, whether you're working with organizations or women's centers or whatever, children, and then also creating poetry, short stories. And I hope you continue to write, I mean, not short stories, novels. I hope you continue to write your novels because you're very good.
Yeah, I wasn't going to write a sequel, but everybody wants to know what happened to Nathan and Brandeis.
Okay, so we got.
So I had, you know, I said you're gonna make me do an Elin Harris, even though I wasn't trying to go there. So I'm doing that one now.
Oh, good.
You know,
when do you think it'll be finished so we can get a copy of it?
Now that I'm not sure of, because I did have a little bit of a writer's block for a little while,
okay.
And then some people who were supposed to get back to me with information kind of disappointed me because they didn't call me.
Okay.
But when I say that, even though it's a fiction book,
mm-hmm.
just like with All For You, there's certain things in there that if you did some research, you know the accuracy of it all, especially when we deal with things like domestic abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So there's topics in this one that I'm addressing, and I want to make sure that the information that I put in there is correct, whether it's a fiction book or not. So that's what was holding me up, but I do have new avenues now, and some people have agreed to help me out. So I'm actually hoping that I can have that one done by December,
okay.
But I can't make that a solid promise.
Oh, but at least by next year. So that's exciting because All For You is really a wonderful book. What last words of encouragement or advice, Runette, would you like to leave with our listeners here at Off the Shelf?
Don't say I wish. There's some people who always say, I wish I could write like that. I wish I could do this. I wish I could do that. No, ask God instead what it is you can do, what it is he put in you. Everybody has a gift. Whether your gift is the ability to add faster than most people without pencil and paper, or your gift is to draw pictures that really, really evoke the soul, if your gift is to speak to people and it ministers, whatever your gift is, ask God for it, you know, as opposed to saying, I wish I could do that. That means you're living in somebody else's shadow, and instead of doing that, find your own sunshine. Don't live in a shadow.
Wow, that is so powerful. Thank you so much, Runette, for your time, openness, and your grace. We appreciate you and your being here on Off the Shelf, and we look forward to the sequel to All For You. And I want to tell our listeners again, you can reach Runette, a wonderful author, poet, active in the community, and a Philadelphia native, at www.poetebo.com, which is www.poetebo.com. Please go check her out and her book, All For You. That is a wonderful, wonderful novel, and her poems are very powerful and poignant. And I really, truly believe you will enjoy them, be entertained, and they'll get you to thinking. You'll be blessed by them
as
well.
Thank you. And there was one other thing. You mentioned Onyx Woman.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a group I finally put together called Dearly Beloved. You might want to check that out, too.
Okay, Dearly Beloved. To our listeners, thank you for listening to Off the Shelf. Please tell your family, friends, colleagues, and book lovers everywhere to tune into us here at Blog Talk Radio. In the coming days, we'll continue to bring you best-selling and up-and-coming writers, producers, editors, agents, and others, movers and shakers in the book business. And please visit me online at www.chistell.com. That's chistell.com. And pick up a copy of my new book, Long Walk Up, which is available now at chistell.com, or available by requesting a copy through your local bookstore, also Amazon.com, Cush City, Barnes & Noble, and Borders. Again, thank you for tuning in to Off the Shelf. Remember that you are valued, loved, and truly blessed. Keep writing and reading great works. Thank you. Runette, hold on for a second. Hey, Brunette. Brunette. Okay.